on you.
The Blackshaw Arts Hour on Wandsworth Radio, where you listen with your ears and not your mouth.
Welcome, everybody, to the first ever live recording of 2017 of the Blackshaw Arts Hour. I'm Aisha, and in the living room podcasting with me this evening is Matt Boothman.
Hello. Happy 2017.
Yeah, happy New Year. It's too late to say that. It's way too late. It's February. Sorry, guys. And we've got Sinead as well, who is a very new voice on the Blackshaw Arts Hour.
Thanks for inviting me.
That's okay. Now, Sinead is... I don't know, do you want to sort of introduce yourself a little bit to the listeners? Because people probably don't know who you are.
Yeah, see, I'll be a new listener, but I actually know a lot of the regular contributors from university. One of the Royal Holloway lot.
So, one of the many. Yeah,
one of the many.
I think I'm the only one that is featured on this radio station who is not from Holloway.
I don't think Andy is he?
Yeah.
Is he?
Oh, yeah. Wow. It's all Holloway. We should just call
this
the Holloway Arts Hour.
I deluded myself we weren't a mafia, but...
Oh, no, we are.
Yeah.
We just appear in random places. That happens to me all the time.
We're all up in your arts.
Oh, yeah. Don't say that again. So on the show this evening, we've got Matt's going to be back and he's reviewing another stellar film this week. Matt, what are you reviewing?
The Lego Batman movie.
Okay, yeah.
We'd kick off 2017's reviews with a bang.
Yeah, fantastic. We also had our Amazing Showcase Award a couple of weeks ago, and we're going to be playing you a piece from that. And we're also going to be revisiting some conversations that we had in 2016, which are, we're going to talk about Cursed Child, the Harry Potter play.
Because we have somebody in the studio who's actually seen it.
Which I'm pretty excited about.
We've done a lot of talking about it, not really knowing what we're on about.
We've combed London. We've combed London for the one person that we all know that's
But I'm
seen
not going to ruin it.
No.
I'll tell you how good it is, but not ruin it, I promise.
Yeah, and I went and saw Half a Sixpence last night. I think we talked about that on a show in 2016 because Helen was raving about it. So Ellie, myself, and Alex went and saw it last night, and it was a tour de force. Lots of dancing, lots of singing. It was just very silly. But I want to talk to you, Sinead, firstly, about your, I guess it's like a mission?
Yeah.
It's like a secret theatre mission?
Well, it's not that secret because I have bored everyone to death with it. But basically, it's kind of the idea. When I first started coming to London as a kid, kind of, you know, you're excited about seeing a show. And then it got into I wanted to see a show at every West End theatre. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of turned out that no one can really agree what a West End theatre is. There's kind of, you know, the ones down Shaftesbury Avenue and things that everyone kind of knows. But there's a lot of different kind of like, does this one get included? So I decided to have a rule that it's all the ones that can win an Olivier.
Okay.
So that's like 55 theatres.
Right.
And that includes like all the West End ones, commercial ones that do all the big musicals. Mm-hmm. And then the National and the Almeida and the Donmar Warehouse, which are smaller or whatever, but they're included.
Okay.
In, like, having major stars and things there as well.
So is this like a lifelong journey?
Well, I looked at my list because I've got my long list of all the shows that I've seen, and the first one, the oldest one, is The Lion King. I saw in 1999.
Mm-hmm.
So we're kind of like creeping up to there. It's taking almost 20 years, which is a long time, but there are some shows that just stay, they linger, like I'm really scared, I'm terrified of everything, so it took me a really long time to see The Woman in Black. And I just kind of, you know, sat there with my eyes closed for the most of the second half, but I saw it.
But you could tick it off on the list.
It's on the list. And I desperately didn't want to see Thriller live.
Did you?
No. I managed to go over a loop around because Showstoppers, the improvised musical, does one-off shows there. So I managed to go to that instead. And I was very happy when I realised that.
That is really going around and trying to get out of Thriller.
Very proud. But the only one that I can't work my way around is Phantom of the Opera is still on the list, and that's going to be on forever and ever and ever. So I will this year go and see Phantom of the Opera.
Oh, wow.
Nobody else is getting in that space because what other show needs a chandelier that falls?
Well, exactly.
I wonder if anyone, do you know if anyone else has ever done this? I wonder if you're going to be like the first person to do it.
I'd love to think that. Probably not. There's probably people that go to loads, but
You never know.
You never know.
You
but
might be able to get into the Guinness World Records for this.
I'm sure there are some people that get into me like loops. There's certain theatres that I've been to loads, and there's others that I haven't been to in like 10 years or like Lion King 20 years.
Right.
But I'm going to finish it this year. I'm going again for my 30th. I'm going to 30 shows this year.
So you're going to 30 shows this year. That's another thing that you're doing.
Yeah. So that's my other target. So I will.
Who's bankrolling this?
You can do it. That's the thing. You can do it cheaply if you
plan.
And
I guess that's an interesting conversational topic about, you know, doing something like this, is that it doesn't cost the world to go and see theatre, even though people may think that that's the case.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, part of my way of getting through it will be to the Fringe. And the Fringe, you can go to, you know, it takes a lot to get up there, but once you're there, it's all really cheap.
Yeah.
And if you plan for the National, which I again go to a lot, mostly dragging Matt along with me.
This is the person that you're going to see all those
dragging,
shows with, Matt.
The dragging is mutual.
Yeah, the dragging is mutual. But there's a lot of planning. So we do a plan of, like, what are we excited about this season? And if you plan it advance, you can really go to amazing theatre really cheaply. So I don't have that much money, but it's a kind of priority.
So how many do you have to go?
On my list,
on your
is
list
six.
Of...
So there's six
to go out of 55.
Out of 55.
I think we might try and follow this throughout the year. So what's your deadline? Do you have a deadline?
Tell our listeners now so that you
can't get out of it.
Yeah, no. So I'm going to say my 30th birthday, which is in August.
Okay. Well, so that's it. We'll check back in with you. And if you've done 55 of those theatres, I'll be so impressed.
Yeah.
Which is like a 20 years in the making. I mean, that's something to...
Well, then I also did the other... So once that's done, obviously you need a new target. So after that, there's all the other theatres in London, which are the fringe theatres.
Mm-hmm.
And at my last count, that was over 80. So that's a lifetime goal. That's not happening yet.
I love how many goals you have. I have no goals. Matt, give us a goal. Do you have a goal?
I don't have a goal.
No.
Actually, my current goal is to get out of you sending me to go and see 50 Shades Darker.
I was talking about this with someone today, actually, and I was saying that the highlight of my year this year is going to be you reviewing that.
Forcing me to go and see it.
You cannot get out of it.
I will definitely listen to that.
Oh, yeah. The first one is just the most incredible review you've
ever
heard.
Ellie still uses that as how to sell this show to people and get people to listen to it.
Well, there you go then.
Is it out
new
yet?
Promos.
So it's out on Valentine's Day, of course.
Of course it is. Woo, okay, so it's out in, well, next week.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Next show. Beauty.
Oh,
I'm
no.
so excited. But let's maybe go into the movie that you're doing this week, which we'll talk to you a little bit after this.
The Matt Boothman Film Review. So good, I put my trousers back on.
So, Matt, what are you reviewing this week?
Now, I did some online polling to decide this.
Oh, did you?
I left this up to democracy.
Oh, I must have missed that. Was that on Facebook?
I did some stuff on Facebook. I did one on Twitter.
It's nice to know democracy still, you know, exists.
Because, you know, it's been a while since we were on the air, so I've seen a fair few films. So I gave everyone the choice of... Ghost in the Shell, the re-release, which is in cinemas at the moment. Assassin's Creed, La La Land, or the Lego Batman movie.
And Lego Batman 1, that is a really good reflection of who follows you on.
So actually, if you just
media.
Look at Twitter, La La Land 1.
Oh, really?
If you just look at Facebook, Lego Batman 1, and combine the two, and Lego Batman just takes
just
the
in
cake.
There. Yeah. Fantastic. I really want to see La La Land. I haven't seen it yet.
I'm kind of happy that it worked out this way, because La La Land's been out a while, and I think everybody's said stuff about it, and it would have just turned into a talk about the Oscar's Best Picture list, really, rather than it being about La La Land. So let's talk about Lego Batman instead.
Yay! Okay.
Yeah, okay. So the bottom line is, it's really good, it's really funny, it's really silly, it's just a fun movie. If you've watched the trailers and laughed at them, as I have, like, basically every movie I've seen for the last 3 months... has had a Lego Batman trailer before it. Always the same trailer, and I always still laugh at it, even though I've seen it that many times. And the movie is, it's that. It's good. It's funny.
Okay.
The script is really tight, and it's all the gags are good. Lots of physical comedy. It's just, it's stupid. Like, it's silly. It's basically like kids... It's the sort of plot like characterizations that you might get with kids actually playing with Lego.
Okay, right.
Which is kind of the thing that the Lego the original Lego movie did.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, I always thought the original Lego movie was a bit more for adults or like grown-up children than actual children, because there were so many like adult jokes, not adult jokes, but kind of like, you know,
references
and stuff in the original one.
Yeah, there's lots of references in this as well. Like anybody who's a Batman nerd is going to see lots of like absolute Z-list ridiculous zany Batman villains pop up in Lego form. And that's kind of what this does. It's it kind of leans into how silly comic books and comic book movies in general are and how silly Batman specifically is.
Okay.
Because obviously we live in an arts sphere right now where comic book movies are a big thing, and a lot of them are geared around trying to take years of ridiculous comic book material and turn them into something kind of grounded in reality. So you end up with like Captain America, the guy with like a flag shield who stands for the justice in the American way, being like a grounded character in a real universe, or of course, Batman, a billionaire playboy who dresses like a bat and punches people, like being treated in these like quite serious kind of blockbuster.
Yeah, he lost his parents, Matt. It's a big deal. Like, you know, it's very serious.
I know. Yeah.
To be honest, that's what I always didn't like about actual Batman films. That it's always far too serious and somber and taking itself a bit too literally. So,
you clearly haven't seen the really old ones.
It's true.
So, I mean, one of the things this does is the Batman in this movie is a Batman to whom everything that's ever happened in a Batman movie has, like, all the Batman movies are part of his
backstory,
history.
Like canon.
They're all canon. They all happened, including the ridiculous 60s TV show with Adam West, with the shark repellent and all of that, all of those kind of silly gadgets.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you can't take him seriously anyway because he's a little Lego figure.
Yep.
So it's the perfect kind of vehicle to just lean into how stupid Batman is, basically, and sort of take the mickey out of him a little bit. So, like, his brooding is a bit more like teenage angsty petulance.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, his, like, the ridiculous self-reliance of Batman, where he doesn't need anybody, is, like, it's shown as just being monstrous ego.
Uh-huh.
And, like, his being a loner is not because he's the best there is at what he does. It's because he's scared of, like, being a family again in case he loses another family, mm-hmm. like he did with his parents.
Yeah.
And on top of that, there's a crazy plot with the Joker and lots of villains from other things. So, like, this is a bit of a spoiler. Spoiler alert.
For the Lego Batman movie.
Batman movie. So there's a lot of Batman stuff, and then you also get to see like Batman and his allies take on like Godzilla and Voldemort and people from other stuff.
Wow. Movies.
Yeah, in the same way the Lego movie did.
Mm-hmm.
Because Lego owns the rights to lots of things, because everybody wants their thing to be a Lego set, so they sort of make the most of that in the movies.
Very handy.
Yeah, super handy. So, like, what I like about it is that it takes this kind of, so Batman is this kind of adolescent superhero fantasy where you're like, I dress in black, I am the knight, I don't need anybody, I'm a master of ninjutsu and a great genius and a detective and a billionaire and like all these things. Like, he is such a silly concept when you actually think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes a movie where, like, it's not trying to excuse that, and it's not trying to paper over it and make it into something that is realistic and grounded. And Batman is not a character that you're particularly supposed to sort of identify with or want to be.
Mm-hmm.
He's basically a teenager going through his angsty goth phase.
Batman's a dick.
Yeah, and Alfred is his like long-suffering dad.
Can I just point out to people who obviously not in this room who are listening, because this is a podcast, every time Matt talks about something, he's holding his fingers about 2 inches apart just to make sure that we're all aware in the room that he's talking about Lego people and not actual people. Yeah. I think that's really funny.
Yep. And it's worth mentioning, just on sort of the technical artist front, that it is it's a stop motion, so it's all real Lego things.
Oh, is it?
Stop motion is not CGI'd, I think. There'll be bits that are papered over with CGI, because there's stuff flying and that kind of thing that you couldn't do with stop motion. But the sort of movement of the little characters around in scenes.
Really? I thought it was all CGI.
Yeah, so did I. That's when you said, like, they're, you know, it's quite physical and stuff, yeah. I was like, how are they physical? They're bits of Lego. they've got their legs move, that's it.
Yeah, because I remember thinking that the original Lego movie was CGI, and then somebody blew my mind and told me that it was stop motion. I may be wrong. I'll have to look this up. Maybe I'll look this up while we're playing something recorded.
We'll look it up and we'll get back to it at the end of the show.
If it's not really stop motion, it's in that style.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
stuff does, great. Like, the movements of the little figures aren't smooth. They are sort
clunky.
Of...
clunky, yeah, yeah, like Lego.
Exactly.
Yeah.
As if it would be if you were... playing with your Lego figures and making like, oh, I'm going to make Batman fight Voldemort. Yeah, exactly.
I just did the motion of something hitting something else with my hands, just for people listening.
Yeah.
Sorry I interrupted you about that cute thing you were doing. Carry on.
That's all right. That's basically it.
That's it.
it's good. It's fun. It's got,
Who plays Batman?
Will Arnett.
Oh, yeah. I like him.
Yeah.
He's very good.
He's very good. He's got a very good... he's got a good... Batman voice for somebody who's not trying to be a serious Batman. And
sure.
Also worth mentioning that he unlike, say, Christian Bale in the Christopher Nolan Batman movies, Will Arnett keeps the gravelly Batman voice even when he's being Bruce Wayne.
Good.
And
because that's not fooling anyone.
No.
Everyone knows that.
He plays Batman as basically like hating to be Bruce Wayne. Like, he wants to be Batman all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he hates when he has to take his mask off and be Bruce Wayne instead. He says a lot of stuff like there's a gag that so Michael Cera plays Robin.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I saw that on the ad.
I think this is in the trailer that he finds his way into the Batcave and he says, "Does Batman live in Bruce Wayne's basement?" And Batman says, "No, Bruce Wayne lives in Batman's attic."
So speaking of cast, it's quite a big cast.
It's
like
huge.
quite big and quite famous.
Yeah, lots of little cameos from people. So like Ralph Fiennes is in it as Alfred. Like I said, like we said, Will Arnett, Michael Cera, Rosario Dawson is so it starts with Commissioner Jim Gordon, the Gary Oldman character from the Nolan films, retiring and his daughter taking over as police commissioner. So Rosario Dawson is the police commissioner. Siri has a credit.
Wow.
The Bat computer is voiced by Siri.
Interesting.
Yeah, Zach Galifianakis is the Joker. He's kind of he's a better Joker than Jared Leto. I'll give him that.
Oh, okay. I've got something to bring back after you finished about Jared Leto.
Okay.
This is like the flashback episode.
Yeah, Conan O'Brien is in it.
Really?
Bindi Williams, who was Lando Calrissian in Star Trek. At Star Wars. Oh, God, I'm going to catch some hell for that one. In Star Wars, he's in
That's
it.
Fine, I'll edit it out.
Yeah, yeah, all sorts. Eddie Izzard is Voldemort because Ralph Fiennes is already playing Alfred. So.
But it's just a really fun thing to do, isn't it? Just to kind of like, you know, a couple of hours work.
Exactly.
To just do a silly...
Yeah, most of them will have just turned up and spent a couple of hours in a booth going... I will kill you, Batman!
Yeah.
And then picked up the check
and gone
home.
I guess, like, that's the cynic in me, where I saw that ad and I saw all those big names and I was like, oh, God, these people don't need the money. And I hate myself for that because it's, like, really fun. And, yeah, it is something that they probably really enjoy going to do, like, to get that call and be like, do you want to be in, like, the Lego Batman movie? And them just going, hell yeah. I'll come down to the studio and record for a couple of hours. So, yeah, I'm sorry that I'm so cynical about... I think it's just the Lego thing.
Okay.
I just can't quite get past
it. It's okay to be cynical because it is a movie that sells toys. Like it's a movie produced by a company whose primary job is to sell toys.
Mm.
But it's one end of the spectrum that can take. So one end is Transformers, where they make absolutely terrible movies whose only job is like... If they sell toys, they've worked, and it doesn't matter whether they're any good.
Yeah.
And, like, they're crossing that over with G.I. Joe and all these sort of failing things. Whereas I don't mind that the Lego movie and the Lego Batman movie are there to sell toys because they are actually good as well. They're funny and they're well put together. And, you know, they don't feel like they're shilling because there's actually some artistry and some merit to them.
Yeah, and I agree with that because I think Lego are, like, they're one of the fastest growing brands in the world and they are one of the greatest brands in the world because you know, they're doing such cool messaging with the movies and all that kind of stuff and all their marketing. So I kind of rate them. So I can't be too cynical about it. I'm glad you enjoyed the Lego Batman movie. So the flashback that I wanted to take you to about the Joker in Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
As it happened, I was on a plane to Australia over the break that we took on the Blackshaw Arts Hour.
I've seen it now.
And I watched it, but I had to switch it off because, and that's how bad it was, because I was on a plane with nothing else to do other than sit there and watch something, and I could not physically bring myself. It was so bad.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if, I think it was probably heavily edited because I was flying on a plane. As all the films were. Most of the films are like 70 minutes running time because they're just edited so heavily. Try and watch Bridget Jones' Baby on a plane. Like, there's no content in there anymore. It's just awful. But Suicide Squad, unwatchable. Hated it.
Can you remember, like, at what point you had to switch it off? Like, had you even got through all of the bit where they're introducing all the characters yet?
Yes, I got to a bit where they were fighting. Like, they got them to a thing and they were, like, on the plane and they were going to the place to do some fighting. And then they did some fighting and I was like, this isn't for me. Where's Bad Mums? I watched that. That was brilliant.
So I hear.
Yeah.
Ellie liked that one, didn't she?
Oh, yeah. I'll talk about all the plane movies I watch maybe on a different show because we're not going to have time today.
New segment.
New segment, the plane movies that Asha watches when she goes back home. Next show, what do you think it might be? Actually, we don't have to have this conversation. So we know what you're doing.
So I just want to talk very quickly about the programming for Valentine's Day, because we've got Fifty Shades Darker, the Fifty Shades of Grey sequel,
which
I can't believe actually ended up getting made after everybody walked off the first production. I thought after the first one, Jamie
you thought
Dornan
you had like clear
I thought Jamie
running.
Dornan had walked away, but apparently they tempted him back. But they have the scriptwriter did walk away, and E.L. James has scripted this one, so this one's going to be like. If I found any redeeming features in the first one, I don't really have high hopes for this one. But what is being released against 50 Shades Darker is John Wick Volume 2.
Yeah, I saw that in the tube.
Yeah, and I'll post the trailer to Twitter because they've done a specific throwing shade at 50 Shades John
they?
Wick trailer.
Interesting. I really liked the first John Wick. I thought
so
it was amazing.
Yeah, it was an unexpected hit.
Yeah,
like nobody, it's a Keanu Reeves action movie. Who expected that to be good?
No one. Cool. Okay, well, I think this will probably, the next show that we do is going to be probably our highest rated show of 2017 because Matt's going to be reviewing the second 50 Shades film, and I might just go see it just for a lol as well.
I might see if I can sneak in without paying, because I really don't want to give it box office so that they make the next
I'll pay.
Okay, cool. I'm holding you to that.
All right, cool. Thanks, Matt. It's so nice to have everyone back and to be actually talking and doing reviews that are current now. It's great. Yay,
very current. Lego Batman's only released this weekend.
Oh, you're so on the ball.
Yeah.
Makes me happy. Okay, so the next thing I'm going to play for you on the show is something that, Matt, can you remind me when the showcase was? It was 2 weeks ago on Monday, am I correct?
It was a Monday. It was the last Monday of January.
Yes, the last Monday of January, which was the 30th of January, we had our showcase award, our new writing showcase award. We'll be telling you a little bit more about it and the winner, because that's been announced on the internet, but we're going to tell you later on in the show and have a bit of a chat about it. But this is one of the pieces that didn't win, but it was still very good. Because all of the pieces were fantastic.
I think, as we've said before, like they're all the ones that make it to that stage are always all good.
Yeah,
and it's then horrible trying to actually choose. Which
yeah,
one to
it
take.
Was particularly hard this year. Actually, this is the third year we've had to choose a winner, and it was packed out, sold out, and all of the pieces were great. So this is one called Made Glorious Summer, and it was directed by Alexander Pankhurst, written by Lily Garwood Lloyd, and part of Tom is played by Stuart Vincent and Rebecca is played by Beth Organ.
Rebecca. 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 Are you actually going to do anything today?
What is there to do?
How about you do something with that mess of a garden to start with?
What's the rush?
No rush. Never any rush for anything around here, it seems.
You're a fixer, I get it.
So what's the plan?
I'm reading, darling, that's the plan.
For the whole day?
If I want to, yeah.
Shouldn't you take a trip into the village?
Maybe. I thought I'd wait and see how I fancied it.
If you don't go now, it'd be too hot to cycle down.
Well, maybe I'll walk.
For 25 minutes. In the midday sun. Never mind. I'll go, shall I?
Relax. It's almost like you forget where we are.
How can I?
Exactly. We're living the dream. Oh, look, it's far too hot. Just give today up and worry about it mañana.
Oh, mañana.
Hmm?
It's hot every day.
Yeah, lovely, isn't it?
Shouldn't you be getting on with your bloody good life fantasies?
Yeah.
Still waiting on that ever elusive vegetable garden you're always on about?
I'm just having trouble, that's all. It's hard to grow food in this heat.
Becky, you've never grown a vegetable in your life.
Oh, well, that's not true.
You even killed that cactus I bought you for your birthday that year.
Well, that's not my fault. Everyone said it didn't need water. Don't just leave me be, won't you? I'll go down to the village a little bit later when everyone's had their siestas.
Becky, aren't you worried this is it? No, I'm thinking about me.
We made this decision together, Thomas.
We were supposed to integrate. Start afresh where no one knew.
Well, we will integrate.
It's been a year.
It's a hard language to learn, okay? I don't see you being any more fluent than I am.
Some normal life this turned out to be. Sun, siestas, salsa. More like a fucking fantasy.
You need to get your act together. Stop playing the victim and be a fucking man. You think you're the only one who's bitterly disappointed? How do you think I feel when you won't even fuck me?
I told you about that.
Yeah, well, bear that in mind.
I gave up my family for you.
I am your family.
You're not enough.
Oh, fuck you. You are so ungrateful. Look what I've done for you. Don't act like you'd be any happier if you'd chosen that other life.
I'm going for a walk.
Why?
To clear my mind.
Well, you're not going to the village, are you?
I haven't decided yet.
Well, I'm going.
Oh, what about mañana?
I changed my mind.
Yeah, of course you did.
We could go together. Salad?
What?
Salad. Do you want any?
Oh, I'm sick of that stuff.
It's refreshing on a day like today.
I'm going to the piscina.
You hate swimming.
I need to cool down.
It's that woman, isn't it? That girl.
This again.
I've seen the way you look at her, flirting over the counter.
You're becoming unbearable.
Do you want to fuck her?
Not now.
But you really want to, don't you? I bet she'd be easy to.
Old women are easier than you, Rebecca.
Oh, here we go. Pathetic little Becky, always so needy, ruining my perfect life!
I'm done. I'm really fucking dumb this time.
Oh, where are you gonna go? Back home to England?
It's as though you're perversely proud of how much we've fucked this up.
Well, why must you see this as a failure? Look what we have. The beautiful Spanish countryside. A place of our own. And each other.
I'm serious, Becky.
What are you gonna do? There's no going back. No open arms to welcome you.
I never wanted any of this.
But you're my childhood sweetheart.
Don't.
Don't you remember, sat on that swing bench?
No, Becky, not now.
When I looked over at you, barely 8 years old, and realised for the first time that you're handsome.
I'm not your fucking prisoner.
I secretly wanted to kiss you, but I've never kissed anyone
before. I said stop!
Please.
Every time I touch you, my skin crawls.
Oh, well, thank you for that. You think I haven't been there? With the guilt and the self-loathing. But we're adults, Tom. We understand the choices we've made.
Then why the hell are we hiding away in the middle of goddamn nowhere in a fucking shack? If it's so great, what we're doing, what we've done, then why are we here?
Other people wouldn't understand.
Yeah. How could they?
You think it's been easy for me? I gave up everything you did.
It always comes around to you, doesn't it? You made me a fucking coward.
Oh, come the fuck on. She was nothing more than a convincing forgery.
Yeah, well, I loved her a damn more sight than I love you.
Why can't you I would.
Why couldn't you leave me be? Why couldn't you just leave me fucking be? Do you think I wanted any of this?
Please, please.
Why did you have to love me, huh? You have a fucking life sentence.
We're just listening to a piece of new writing called Made Glorious Summer, written by Lily Garwood Lloyd. So, Matt, you saw this piece at the Showcase Award show the other night. I didn't because I was downstairs and we sold out, so I manned the door. So that's really exciting for me because I get to, announce now that the winner of the Showcase Award was Mothman, and I get to see it at some point when we've sort of worked on it for a year. In a year's time, I'll get to see it.
Yeah,
it
was written by the full thing instead of just a scene.
Yeah, that's good. It was written by Nicole Locke. So congratulations to Nicole. She's going to be working with us for a full year and we're going to build it up so it's a full length and then we'll put it on
for one night only as an industry showcase.
Yes.
To see if we can get any interest for Nicole from producers, from theatres, anyone who wants to sort of take it on.
Yep, that's the plan. Oh, we're also going to be working with Chris Buxey, who wrote one called The Final Adventure of Frankie Fightwell. So we're going to be sort of helping him out, I think, a little bit. That might be a feature piece that Blackshaw does maybe at a WAF or something. Yeah. We're not really sure yet.
Yeah, cheated very slightly. Nicole definitely won, but, you know, sometimes there are other things that didn't win that you still want to develop a little bit.
Yeah, so exactly.
Chris isn't getting the full showcase treatment. He's not getting the full sort of mentoring and the whole year of development. He's going to work on it sort of off his own bat. But it's sort of a show with Blackshaw's support now.
Yeah. We like those kind of shows. So because we do this every year, that means that the next industry showcase, so the winner of last year's, it all gets very confusing at this point of the year. We've got one coming up, which is going to be the industry showcase called Carlic Ogue, and that's going to be in March, we believe. But check our Twitter, Blackshaw Update, and have a look out for that. If you're media or people who want to come along and get tickets and see something that you could maybe take home, I guess.
Yeah, it's a new Irish play about kind of folklore and myth and the sort of interaction of that with modern Ireland.
Yes. I'm very excited about seeing it. We're actually, we're casting for Irish actors at the moment, which is integral to the piece.
Yeah.
So hopefully, hopefully that works out.
While you're checking out our social media channels, keep an eye on the website, blackshawonline.com. Keep an eye on our Facebook, which is Blackshaw Theatre on Facebook.
Yep.
For that casting call, if you're a male actor who can do a decent Irish accent.
Or if you are an Irish actor person. Yes. Full Irish is...
actor who can do a decent Irish accent includes actual Irish people.
Could just be an Irish person who can't act. we don't want those, just as a note. So that was the showcase, and that's the winner of Mothman. So we might actually play that on that little piece of Mothman on the show in 2017. So listen out for that. But right now we're going to do a throwback to a conversation that we had probably 3 months ago now, Matt.
I tell you what, we should start with a quick throwback to a conversation we had earlier this episode, because I need to eat my words.
It's okay.
So neither the Lego movie nor the Lego Batman movie are actual physical stop motion. They are very advanced CGI that mimics every brick and mimics the motion of stop motion. So it isn't real stop motion, but it's good enough to fool me.
And that's how impressive it is, because it fooled you.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's what we're going with.
It means we can just have the films sooner, because they don't have to take years and years to do.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that would take years. Years. Yeah. Oh, maybe. I wouldn't like to be doing that. Anywho, we're going to revisit a conversation that we've had previously on this show, and it was sort of off the back of talking about, I think, Fantastic Beasts is why we were talking about this, Matt. Is that right?
What are we calling back to?
Cursed Child.
Cursed Child, yes.
Yeah.
So we've talked about that a few times. I think we talked about it in context of Fantastic Beasts, and obviously we talked about it a bit when it was first announced.
Yes.
And people were buying tickets 8 months in advance, not looking at anybody in the room.
I think Matt and I were talking about it because we just didn't know anyone that had seen it, mm-hmm. and we were just speculating, and then realised that we needed to actually get someone who's seen it to have this conversation properly, because it's just him and I talking about nothing that we don't, you know, something we don't know. But Sinead is here, and you've seen it.
I have. I am that person that was obviously, the day that they were first released, the very first ones, I was there, number whatever, 9,000 in the queue. To get tickets. So, yes, I have seen it.
Both parts?
Both parts.
Did you see them both on the same day?
No, see, I did it because it is a lot of money. Mm-hmm. I think it's fairly good for what it is.
Good value for the West End.
Good value for the West End. But I figured I didn't want to blow all that money in one day or 2 days. So I did them 2 weeks apart. Because I think, okay. You know, there's a whole load of, you know, the final Harry Potter film, we had a year in between. I could cope with 2 weeks.
So explain to me the two parts. I don't actually know what that means.
As in, they're two fully kind of like, I think it's 2 hours each part.
Oh.
And there's a cliffhanger, which is
really?
Why people do it in 2 days, because they can't wait. But
so is it like they do one part and then the next night they do another part? How does that work?
Yeah, so that was part of the stress of getting the tickets, mm-hmm. is the fact that you've got to match up getting two sets. So there were a whole load of part twos floating around, but there's no point seeing part two when you haven't seen part one.
I didn't realize that. Maybe that's why, is that why everyone, there was an uproar, Matt? Maybe I just completely missed the whole, the crux of the issue here.
I don't think there was uproar about that specifically. I mean, there's precedent for that. Angels in America, the Kushner play, was released in two parts.
Okay. Which is also very stressful getting the tickets. If anyone else listening was part of that ticket queue, trying to find part one tickets before part two was quite stressful.
Because that's on, Angels in America is being revived at the National this year. So that's another two-part play that people have had to stress about.
Okay. So tell us about your experience at Cursed Child.
Yeah. So
obviously, let's just sort of put you as a very big Harry Potter fan.
So I'm a very big Harry Potter fan.
Right.
Let's just get that out there. Fully admit to that. And I'm obviously also a big theatre fan. So very, very excited. And there was a lot of build up to it. And even though I was there on the very first day when the tickets were released, the script was actually released a few months before I saw the show. So there was that balance of, am I going to try and hold out,
mm-hmm.
or am I going to read the script before? And I decided to hold out because I thought there's been a whole thing, I'm going to cross fingers that people are good enough to actually keep the secrets. And I didn't know anything. Mm-hmm. Well, I knew a couple of like slight things about what the premise was, but I didn't know any plot points before I went in, and I'm actually really glad that I did that, because mm-hmm. There's some quite big plot points, and particularly the cliffhanger from part one to part two. I'm really glad I didn't know that before I went in, because there was a real feeling of kind of like surprise and shock in the theatre, and that was kind of palpable.
Mm.
And I really loved that. I'll talk about the things that I loved about the show. Again, just saying, I'm not going to spoil anything for anyone.
You can do that off air for me.
Yeah. The things I really loved about the show were how much they've appreciated it being a theatre show. There's been a few things in the paper about it being a film. It wouldn't make sense. It just is a theatre show, and they've clearly gone in with that thought, the fact that they don't go for all the bells. Yeah, they've got a huge budget, absolutely huge budget, and obviously they could have priced the tickets out, whatever, and they would have sold. But they haven't gone for it being all bells and whistles and being kind of like a Wicked with, like, you know, giant dragons or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
They've gone for it being, there's a lot of cast on the stage, and they've kind of got this station as being the set for it, and it's very beautifully kind of choreographed in lots of kind of like changing set things. But what I love most was the kind of like old school magic tricks that they do. All the magic is really kind of like old school theatre things that you'd probably recognise from other shows but used in different ways and mm-hmm. magic tricks. So it's just like little elements that you see kind of like dotted around the place that aren't meant to kind of like dazzle you, but they just kind of set up the world. And I really loved that they didn't go for it being a big spectacular thing. It was all about kind of like setting up the world. And there was a brilliant, again, I'm trying to find a way of making sure this doesn't ruin anything, how with my, talking about earlier, with my interest in the theatres, they use the theatre in a way that I've never seen done before. When you see that, you will understand what I mean. Part two. But they kind of, J.K. Rowling's talked about like picking the Palace Theatre because it looks a bit like Hogwarts and it's, you know, big. And they've done something that kind of I've never seen done before. Just using that building and again, that made it feel like a live event rather than it being in a cinema. You couldn't do that. That whole plot point would go.
I'm more intrigued by that.
I want to go see it now.
By any of the plot points.
I know.
Yeah, which brings me to the downsides, which are the downsides of me being a huge Harry Potter fan, because there's a couple of plot points that I, as a big Harry Potter fan, kind of go, that character would never do that. Mm-hmm. And that's the parts that feel slightly like fan fiction. There's
right.
a couple of, yeah. there's one or two points where I'm kind of going, that's just like wish fulfillment. It's kind of like, you know, Molly and Sherlock getting together. It's never going to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, love whose hand might be. It just doesn't work for those characters.
Yeah.
So, there's a couple of those points that kind of niggled me, but it didn't ruin what was a great theatre experience. I think they might have gone a bit overboard with it being the most amazing theatre experience ever.
Is that what they said?
Yeah, they got a bit carried away, and I loved it, and I don't regret having gone to it, and I think it was well worth the money.
Do you think people who aren't as big Harry Potter fans, like, I mean, I love the films.
Yeah.
I've not read the books, but I really like the films. I'd watch them if they're on telly, like, tonight. Would people like me be...
I think you would enjoy it as a theatre thing. It's beautifully done. It's beautifully choreographed. And I think they explain enough about the plot. There's a bit, again, that might be a bit for Harry Potter fans, kind of like, okay, remember this happened in whatever.
Yeah.
It does help when you remember. And there's a couple of times when the audience are kind of like shocked or get intake of breath.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you wouldn't do that if you were a big Harry Potter fan because it doesn't have the same significance. But it was a really nice shared experience.
I can imagine,
And I think that's something we didn't have, but I've heard that people that do it 2 days in a row or whatever, the same audience
same
coming
people.
Back, sit in
yeah.
the same seat. So the kind of, again, your kind of like excitement coming back.
It's so interesting, that whole franchise, as you know, reading the books is such a personal experience and everyone reads a book in a different way. You still get the same storyline, but, you know, the pictures in your head are different to another person. And then you see the films and that's still quite a personal thing because you're relating it back to how you saw the book. And then you get to have this really shared experience with a whole bunch of other people who love it as much as you do. That must have been a really cool feeling.
It was really cool. I mean, I find it really interesting that a younger generation are getting to like it now, because we were at the perfect
you grew up with
age.
It
was exactly that, you know, the books came out every summer holiday. Me and my sister would have to share the book. So again, with that sharing the secrets, it kind of already initiated us, because one had to read the book and then not ruin it for the other one while they finished it on the same holiday. So it was something we really grew up with, but I love the fact that it's like she's been reinvigorated with the new Fantastic Beasts and the new shows and everything. It feels like it's had a new lease of life.
Yeah.
That isn't just a cash cow. I like to think better of J.K. Rowling, my heroine.
I'm so glad that we've talked about that now, Matt, because now I like actually understand, and like hearing about it from someone who really is a massive Potter fan is quite cool. Not that that's a bad thing.
No.
Own that. Yeah. You know. But yeah, no, that's, I'm really, I didn't know that it was two parts. Huh. Look at me learning. I always told you I'm the one that has the less, you know, least information on this show.
You're the voice of the listener.
Yes. Yes, I am.
On this subject, I seem to remember that I made a prediction on this show that the play script of Harry Potter and the Cursed Child would be one of the biggest selling play texts ever.
Did you? Yes. Did you now?
I did. I was right.
Did you? Oh, it came through. It came through.
Yeah, so it is the biggest selling play script since records began.
Wow.
It shifted over 840,000 copies in its first week.
Wow.
So as a comparison, the Penguin Classic edition of Romeo and Juliet sold 127,000 copies since 1998.
Oh my goodness, that's amazing.
Yeah.
I don't know anyone who's read it.
You know I hate that with a passion.
Yeah, but it's taught in schools.
Yeah, like, I know.
It's taught in schools and it's still only sold that many.
Would you read it?
This script? Yeah, sure. Yeah. We had a vague plot at one point of doing a table read of it since none of us are ever going to get tickets.
I would say, I'd be disappointed in... The script is not the strongest element of it. There's a couple of slightly cringe-worthy... Okay. Things, but if you bear in mind what is meant to be visually, then it might help.
Yeah, I'm so glad that we've talked about that.
Clearly, yeah.
Yeah. Well, now we're going to move on to something that I saw last night, which is not, I'm not going to speak about it as passionately as Sinead has just spoken about Cursed Child. I went and saw Half a Sixpence on the recommendation of Helen Johnson.
It's okay, because Helen's already done the enthusiastic bit about Half a Sixpence.
Yes.
She was effusive on the subject.
She was, to the point that after we ended the recording of that show, Ellie said, "Do you want to go?" And I was like, I guess. How much are tickets? £10, fine, I'll go. Because that's very cheap for a Wednesday evening. So yeah, we went along last night. It was fine. It was very musical. And obviously, like, that's kind of what you expect. But I'm not a huge musical fan. And it was just sort of like, it was like old school musical, I guess. Just
so it's not a musical that is going to convert people who don't like musicals in the first place.
Oh, no. And I was very good, I think, because I generally am... not cynical, I just find them a bit grating. And I went and saw Matilda.
Yeah.
Probably 6 months ago now. And I loved Matilda, but I did find it at times a bit grating. And I think maybe it was because the kids' voices were just a bit like, you know, how people can sing and it's a bit screechy. Half a Sixpence wasn't too screechy, so I was kind of fine with that. And the dancing was amazing. I mean, the whole cast was just, it was super slick and so well put together. The main guy is outstanding. Absolutely. Just Ellie and I were sort of holding each other slightly as we were watching it. Every time he did something, we'd be like, "Ooh, he did that. Look at him. He just loved to dance. He loved to dance so much." But the only gripe that I think Ellie and I would both have with Helen is that she promised us tap dancing and there wasn't very much tap dancing. Oh. There was maybe one bit of tap dancing. And we were really there just for the tap. So that was slightly disappointing, but no, it was really good. And I would urge people to go and see it because it is really affordable and it's quite a fun show. If you do like a musical, it's so well put together. And then you also realize all the songs in it. You're like, "Oh, I know this song. How do I know this song? That's not good."
And isn't he kind of a rising star as well?
Like, I think so.
Go and see it for a tenner and you can say, "I saw him in his first big part."
That's really bad of me. I don't actually know his name, but I'll put it in the blog when I put this episode up online. He is absolutely brilliant. And Ellie was saying when the show ended that I think it's sort of his breakout biggest role that he's done so
I think
far.
That's really nice to know that can still happen. Like, you know, theatre stars being made that haven't had to be
totally.
In, like, TV before.
And also, he just, like, at the end, and obviously, I always forget that musicals sort of do the reprise, and then it happens again, and then the cast come out again, and there's a lot of clapping for probably about 15 minutes at the end there. And he just seemed to really, you know, when you see someone and they're just loving it, and he was sort of yelling with enthusiasm, and it was just really cute because I was like, "Oh, mate, you must just love your job." Like,
Charlie Stemp.
Charlie Stemp. There we go.
Remember it.
Yeah. He might be big one day. He's got a great head of hair. I mean, that, it really does it for me.
Were you in a high seat? Were you up in the gods?
Super high.
So you had a good look at his hair.
Yes, it was all good from all angles. But yeah, we were very high. Lovely theatre as well. Can't
Which
complain about
is it.
It? I can't. It, oh, it's it?
It's the Noel Coward.
Noel Coward.
Oh,
the
I
one
like
that
the
I
Noel
always
Coward.
Call the Noel Edmund.
Very different person.
Very, very different. Yeah. I know. I made that mistake once and people laughed at me for about 15 minutes. I was like, "I don't even know who Noel Edmund is because I'm not from here." So yeah, that was Half a Sixpence. Obviously, I'm not reviewing it. I'm just telling you what I saw.
It's just you're like you're offering us a second opinion.
Yes,
just, we're fact checking Helen.
Exactly, and also because people know I don't particularly like musicals that much, this is one that I didn't hate. So you know that's
good. Ringing endorsement.
Look at me learning how to like all types of theatre now. It's only taken 2 years.
It took us a while, but we've worked on you.
Mm. Oh yeah, I'm so cultured. So cultured. Anyway, that has brought us pretty much to the end of the show, guys, I think. Thank you so much for coming in and podcasting with us this evening. Thanks for your review of the Lego Movie, Matt. And we're so excited for next time.
I'm so excited to revisit that world and those characters. I just really want to catch up with them and see what they've been doing.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so excited about the plot. It's going to be so interesting and just so well-rounded. And yeah,
I bet there'll be helicopters like
how many modes of transport can be in the sky? Because if there's one that they haven't, you know, thought of and it's not up in the sky and they're not in it, I'm not going to be happy.
I'll report back.
Great.
Specifically on that. That's all I'm going to talk about.
For an hour. Yeah. Our listeners will love that. And thank you also to Sinead, your first ever show with us. Hopefully it wasn't too terrifying.
Wasn't as much as I thought. So that's, you know, yay, great.
We're nice. It's really just three people sitting in a living room. That's all we're doing here. But yeah, that
give away our secrets.
That has been the first live show of the Black Shore Arts Hour for 2017. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time with 50 Shades of Grey, the second one, and some new writing and all the other stuff. Vicky might even come back and do a arts thing.
Yeah, boys might even come back and do an art.
We haven't actually spoken about the fact that the boys aren't doing an art this episode. Yeah. So, you know, the less said about that, the better.
Get in touch on at Black Shore Update on Twitter or on Facebook and tell us what art the boys should do in their first art of 2017.
We might even hold a poll or something.
Yeah.
We'll hold a Facebook poll. I'll make someone do that. Anyway, that's been the show, guys. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you in a couple of weeks' time.
Good night.
Night. Bye.